We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
But $40 million, I just would, because I don't have to do anything right now. I don't have to. So closer we get to the draft, the off season, who else becomes desperate? Because we ain't playing games in February. Nothing's happening. So Ray, it's fascinating to hear them all. I have yet to hear one that I've heard a bunch of them that, oh, okay, I'm going to take the phone call. But I haven't heard one that tells me, because if you're going to feel this, for instance, let's say San Francisco or Miami, it's got to hurt your program, your football team, and gut you so bad that you feel the pain even though Watson's coming to your building. That's the trade that I'd have to get for Watson, unhappy or not. But we're getting to the point now, heck, they're going to get the coach before we know what the decision is for Watson, obviously, but I don't know, Ray, another thing, I don't know if Nick's going to get the full say in this. He's getting all that money, and you think he is, but the presence of the religious part of Jack Easterby and Cal McNair, and I'm not making fun of religion, I'm just telling you that Jack Easterby has far more say as a chaplain than you would ever imagine in this city and Cal McNair's ear, than maybe even Nick Caserio. I can't fathom Nick Caserio, who has been in New England and knows what 15 to 20 years of the GOAT or the most elite quarterback in that period of time in Tom Brady means to a franchise. And after seeing what happened when Brady wasn't there and his impact in Tampa, I can't fathom that Nick Caserio is a smart football guy, wouldn't jump across the table and want to fight Cal McNair if he even suggested, dude, trade him for two number ones and two players. There's nothing I can't. So as far as a trade goes, listen, you'd have to come at me with a haul that is like, oh, okay, we're gutting them, and we're going to rebuild anyway because we're 4-12, and we got $40 million to Watson. And the cap hit they'll take by trading him is huge too. And they don't have a lot of money, nor draft picks, so I know they want assets. So I haven't heard one that makes me say, hell yes, let him walk. Let's do this thing. I don't trust the franchise.
So I appreciate what you're saying, obviously, and I'm right there with you. I wouldn't even think about trading him for any of these things. But you also alluded to, like, what is leading the decision-making? Because if Jack Easterby is in charge, and look, nothing against Josh McCown. If they're really considering him, I don't honestly know what criteria they could be using other than religion to make him a head coach candidate, right?
100%, Matt. And I was thinking about that today. A buddy of mine, one of my co-hosts, he said, Sean, did you see this? He sent me a text. I was studying today. I was trying to stay off Twitter and study for this master's and these classes. And I saw it. I said, yeah, I saw it, but I didn't really pay attention to it because I thought I just kind of blew it off. And he says, sent me another one. I said, you know who? And I love Josh, guys. He's one of the finest humans, and what a career. And all, we don't even need to qualify that. This isn't his fault, Josh McCown. Hell, if somebody wants to interview you for a job, he wants to be a coach someday, why wouldn't he? But Josh is a very spiritual, God-fearing man. And we've heard the talk in here, guys. They pray over, hold hands and pray over decisions, Jack. And I don't mind people praying over decisions, but like it's like if you go play Powerball. If you don't buy a ticket, you ain't winning. You got to pray, but you also, I believe the good Lord wants you to help yourself too, which they do nothing. They do nothing about that in the front office. They're so dysfunctional. So, Matt, you make a great point. If he does hire Josh, it's because then you'll know. I'll put it to you this way. If they hire Josh McCown as the head coach, you will know that this was based on prayer, holding hands in a conference room, than it was on who's qualified to get the job. No disrespect to Josh, it just will, because they're all in that they think alike, and that's okay. But you can't make football decision based on how often a guy goes to church or if he prays like you do, or whatever God he's praying to. I'm not being sacrilegious. It's just factual. So I listen, and I know people say, well, listen, Deshaun controls this whole thing. Well, I mean, you'd love to have a happy Deshaun, but really he doesn't. Deshaun Watson doesn't control it because, well, what if he's unhappy? Well, do you really think if Deshaun shows up, he wouldn't play hard? Of course he's going to play hard. If he doesn't show up, if you guys can name me an athlete that's willing to pass up $40 million and a full season of pay and play at quarterback, I've not seen him. I haven't. And if you can find me one, I'm all ears at that position at 25 years old. It's just the most – it's becoming one of the most fascinating yet depressing and mind-boggling front office decisions and front office dysfunction that we have in sports. And that's saying a lot when you got the Knicks – and franchises like that over the last 15 years.
Sean Salisbury here on 95.7 The Game. Speaking of praying over a Mega Millions purchase, somebody obviously did that. Did you see the $970 million jackpot was won by one person in West Virginia? The cash option is $716 million. Good night, everybody. Wow.
So wait a minute. I thought Mega was tonight.
Or well, there's
Powerball.
Maybe Powerball is the one that went.
Yes, I was going to say because I got my Mega ticket. I didn't win yet, so don't let's not put that out there yet.
Well, I tell you,
I'm all in.
I hope Jack Easterby prays over your tickets tonight, desperately
you
for
and
you.
Me
I
both,
really
brother.
Do.
You and me both.
Remember the little guy. Should that ship come in, Sean? So we got ourselves a championship weekend. Let's take these games in chronological order. We're going to begin our afternoon at Lambeau Field, which seems like a fine place to begin playoff games of this caliber. It's going to be Tom Brady against Aaron Rodgers, and if you like quarterback matchups, it's never been as sexy as that in an NFC title game, right? I mean, that's pretty damn good.
No doubt, Damon. And I actually was, you know, on my show we were talking today, and I was thinking, okay, I need to know one reason the Packers are going to win, one reason Tampa Bay is going to win. You know, I start mulling. We got all the different matchups and going through it and watching. And I don't think either quarterback will be the reason they lose. I don't. I think both. What's it going to be, 40 degrees? This is perfect football weather. Brady's played in the cold his whole career. He lives in January. Rodgers has had an MVP year. They'll both – put it this, they'll both be primed. It won't be because of them that they lose this game. Now, it might be because of them they win, but they're not going to win in spite of these guys either, more than likely, either team. If either quarterback plays poorly, which I don't think is going to happen, we may that other team's going to run them. But this is a great football game. I had Tampa going to the Super Bowl in August. I'm going to stick with it. But for me, for Green Bay to win, I'm trying to think outside the quarterback because my assumption is that these two dudes are pros, and you're right, the sexy matchup, everything to love about it is Green Bay. I got to just see the semblance. Two things for me, the semblance of the run game. Even though Rodgers can carry you, I'd like to see them at least – they've got to have the threat of it. It can't just be Aaron because the last time Todd Bowles played this team, he pressured Aaron from the opening snap. And a few interceptions and some balls that go to the defense. And that it's going to be six or eight plays that are going to decide this thing. I'm just telling you. And a couple of those picks. So the pressure with interior, that offensive line's got to hold the front seven and those guys that can pressure. That's one. And Green Bay, for them to win, must sew that up and have some run game presence for New England. To me, I think that obviously on the other side for Brady, he can't move. So, again, and he does not like pressure from the interior. The key here is for the New England Patriots, are you going to – I mean, why do I keep saying New England? Yeah, it's called the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm still stuck in 20
old habits die
Nicholson.
Hard.
Isn't that the truth? For the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, for them to do their thing, you know, they coming off that big win, you feed off the win you had with them. They're playing so well offensively. Keep an eye on how often they motion in this game. To find out if it's man or zone, Brady loves pre-snap read. He wants pre-snap read. He doesn't want to be stationary with his people that line up. See if Bruce Arians is going to revert to old habits and try to play kill you vertically, or if he's going to let Tom do his thing and beat you horizontally, shallow crossers, get the ball out quickly, because you can't take sacks because Tom will not buy time from the pocket other than in the pocket. And then take your shots when necessary, because they've got great perimeter people. So for me, obviously both offensive lines, Rodgers better to sidestep and get on the edge, Brady in the pocket, but you have to have some semblance of the run game, and Tampa Bay is going to have to recreate what they did against Aaron Rodgers, and Tom Brady is going to have to make sure that the ball is protected and they get it out quickly. If they do, and then they take their shots, I think Tampa has a chance to win. If everybody plays their best, Green Bay wins the game, because Rodgers has been playing at a level this year that's freak show Mars-like, but Brady the last 6 weeks has been playing like, well, 28, 30-year-old, 35-year-old, 38-year-old, 40-year-old Tom Brady.
I want to ask you a question, not about the quarterbacks per se, because they've been sort of dissected down to a fine gray paste.
Yep.
But the weather on Sunday is supposed to be high 20s, snow, and about 10 degrees, 10 miles an hour of wind. As a quarterback, I know that the wind is the thing that would concern you the most.
Yep.
But given the fact that both of them have played in this before, who has the better personnel to overcome that?
Well, I think, you can't, and when I played in Minnesota, when we were getting ready to play a game like this, a big game or cold weather game, you know, we go outside and then certain situations you may go in the bubble, but you can't simulate. You know, it's like we can get a quarterback to maybe simulate what a guy does, stand in the pocket and ripping it, maybe not like Brady or Rodgers, but you can do that. That's tangible. But you can't simulate, you can't, unless you go to the city 5 days early, can't simulate 25-degree weather. I'm not overly worried about 10 degrees unless it's one of those sideways, blowing sideways 10 degrees. And it's not just into the wind. I worry about it with the wind, because you remember I saw Josh Allen miss some throws last week with the wind where the ball sails and the point stays up on the deep ball. So it's both ways. You just don't change your mechanics as a quarterback. But I would say Green Bay, for the simple reason is, while Brady and Gronk are used to this, the rest of the Cats are used to practicing in 75-degree weather. And while to me, and for whatever reason, and the people I've been around that have succeeded in this, Ray, have been guys that are that mentally it just doesn't bother them. Because really, mid to upper 20s, snow, if it's 10 degrees, if it's 25 degrees, I mean 25 miles per hour wind, you're like, whoa, different. But once they get into it, that especially if the wind dies down, it should be okay. Heck, easier to play in snow than rain and wind, but depending on the wind, but it shouldn't affect them that much. But, you know, it's mentally tough. You're going to walk out there and watch warm-ups. Who's running around with their hands, you know, tucked in and the rest of it. But the mental tough teams, I know it sounds so simplistic. You cannot simulate it. So the mental toughness part of this will come into play. If it's pushing 30 degrees, I don't think it's going to be that big a deal, but it's going to be great for us because this is the way it's supposed to be. Outdoors, cold weather, the best two quarterbacks, you know, GOAT and the one who's playing the best this year. I can't wait for it, but I would expect that Green Bay would have the advantage simply because they can simulate it. They can practice in it during the week. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers can't. Mental toughness will come into play big time if that's the case.
You mentioned Green Bay needing their run game to show up, and I'm sort of thinking along the same lines as it when it comes to Buffalo, right? This is a team that, as great as Josh Allen in the past game have been all year long, if they can't run it a bit against Kansas City, they could be in trouble, yeah?
Yeah, and here's what I think about all four of these quarterbacks, guys, especially in this game. We got the You know, Rodgers can make all the throws, but we got the quick slant, get it out. Rodgers, the quick release, and they throw the ball to the flat, and they'll hit out cuts and all those things that Rodgers likes to do, and LaFleur and that group. And Brady likes the shallow crosser, and they take their shots because Bruce loves vertical. So you got the singles, doubles hitters versus the big boppers, Aaron Judge and Stanton and those guys who can hit it 500 feet in this game. Guys, I believe that both offenses, quarterbacks, are going to throw it all over the place. I think that Josh Allen, they're both capable of saying, hop on, we'll throw it 40 times, and we are going to make chunk, big-time plays. But I agree. Now, neither one of these defenses overly scare me. If I'm an offensive coordinator, I dial it up, create formations, create mismatches, and create conflict for the defense if I'm the quarterback. But, yes, and it's not even success. You know, I don't need to run for a lot of yards. It's nice. But for me, it's the attempts. It's the attempts of just get me 4 yards on first down and then 3 yards, and now we're at third and three. Now it's manageable. If you blitz me and I throw hot, you don't get to catch and tackle without me falling for a fourth yard and a first down. It's when it's third and seven, you blitz me, I throw hot, you tackle me for five, I got a punt. So, yes, I would think, but the truth is with both of these quarterbacks, I'm not sure either run game has to be awesome, but I think it has to be somewhat relevant in the game, no doubt. I'm going to tell you the biggest key in this game for me, the Chiefs and their explosives. Buffalo has to limit them. They cannot sit there and allow the Chiefs to go slant route, run after the catch, 40 yards, Tyreek Hill. Screen pass to Kelce, break a tackle, boom, 37 yards. You know, Hardman, the way that they mix everybody in, they've got to limit the home runs. Speaking of singles, they got to flip the switch and make them. And Leslie Frazier did an unbelievable job last week of making Lamar Jackson one-dimensional. Even that one-dimension wasn't very good last week. It was okay, and unfortunately he got hurt. Leslie, the Buffalo Bills defense is going to have an out-of-body experience, even better than they played last week. If they do, and we're sitting watching these cats go throw for throw, personnel better in Kansas City, but with Stephon Diggs and Beasley, they're not exactly chopped liver. And Allen is the one guy, whether it's vertical or buying time with his feet, that is the best matchup for Mahomes. It says, oh, I'll raise you one, and then Pat will raise him one. I think both these games are close, and I think the Kansas City Chiefs win in a close one, and I'm taking Tampa in the other one. But there's got to be some semblance of the threat of run, but I would think all four of these quarterbacks are capable. Most importantly, we know defenses are going to have to be able to tackle in space in all four of these teams in both of these games.
I'm still a fat kid at lunch. I love Salisbury Steak Day. Thank you very much, Sean. This was awesome. You've double-dipped this week. You have officially given it the office. Have yourself a great weekend. Enjoy the football, and thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. And I'm about a day away from saying trade Deshaun to Jimmy Garoppolo for an apple and a roadmap for Jimmy and an apple and a roadmap and get Deshaun out of here so you guys can get to be spoiled with the riches of a great quarterback. So I'm about that close. I've had it with the
Texans.
Wow.
So there you go. Look at it this way. Niner fans would take that deal instantly.
Yes, they would.
I think. I think they would. They used to
thanks,
be pretty.
Guys.
Yeah, they used to be pretty rich in quarterbacking in these parts, and there's been a downturn in the quarterbacking economy for the 49ers for the past few years. So, yeah, look, there is no way to make a trade for Deshaun Watson that on some level doesn't really, really hurt. I would do everything I could to keep Kittle in the room, but multiple first rounds and years of picks with, you know, oscillating between first round, second round, yeah, I would do it. And if it had to take Bosa, I wouldn't want to do it, but I would. I really would. Number one, he's coming off an injury. Number two, why is he so valuable? Because he goes to get the quarterback. So, geez, quarterbacks must mean something. So you got a chance to walk away with the best quarterback in the game, not in the playoffs. God, how do you say no to that? It's something else, man. I don't think it's going to happen. I do think it started where I don't think Deshaun Watson's going to get traded. Now I do kind of think Deshaun Watson is going to be traded. I just don't think he's going to be traded to the 49ers. I think that there's going to be another team out there with a much more aggressive package to offer, and that'll probably trump what the Niners could come up with.
Well, Tim Kawakami wrote something in The Athletic this week about Kyle Shanahan's philosophy, which seems to argue against them giving up too many assets for Deshaun Watson, because at least according to Kawakami, one of the things that Kyle Shanahan believes in is that he can find receivers to make quarterbacks better. And if that's so, they might be just a wide receiver away from being happy with Garoppolo. So I think the one thing about the 49ers is they have different ways to skin a cat. Whereas all the other teams that I see most mentioned with Watson are sort of more desperate to have him because they don't have enough other ways to make a good offense. I don't know if he's right or wrong. I mean, this argument has sort of worn down my skull. But I think it was interesting that he threw that out there because on a certain level, that does seem to make sense about the way Shanahan thinks, if nothing else.
Well, but in my view, that
line of thinking is an argument against Jimmy Garoppolo, not against Deshaun Watson. Because Deshaun Watson is so clearly a superstar, elite-level player that, yeah, I mean, wide receivers who are good will still make him better, but he changes the game entirely, having a guy at that level, and any idiot knows that. You don't have to be Kyle Shanahan to know that about football. Where I would think that particular philosophy comes in is with regards to Garoppolo as compared to, for instance, Andy Dalton. Like, I think we'd all agree, and Dalton may not be the best example because he's 35, but Andy Dalton 5 years ago or something, right? We might all think Garoppolo is more talented and capable, but if you get the right receivers, you can basically get the same thing out of the two of them. I mean, heck, at times, he's been able to get that out of Nick Mullins, right? So, to me, that's where the wide receivers making the quarterback better thing comes in. There's no amount of, you could fill the entire 53-man roster with wide receivers, and you're not making Jimmy Garoppolo into Deshaun Watson.
Right. How about this? If you had a Jimmy Garoppolo, DeAndre Hopkins connection, and you took away DeAndre Hopkins from Jimmy Garoppolo, I bet you his season would feel a lot more different than the year that Deshaun Watson just still put up. You took away his number one weapon, and he still put up jaw-dropping numbers. So, you know, yeah, you want receivers who can make your quarterback better, but if you can take the best receiver in football away from your quarterback and your quarterback doesn't miss a beat, you might want that guy too. So, yeah, lots to get into there. We're going to come back with it. The NFL news of the day, the sad news of the day, that this is the day that Henry Aaron passed away. Some very poignant sound from that moment in time, and another sound from another moment in time that had an awful lot to do with Henry Aaron. So stick around. Plenty still coming up today. We're going to get back into the Warriors. Bad loss to the New York Knicks. It is our... It's a great segment, and it's around the corner, so stick around here. Damon Ratto and Cole Scan, 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Cole Scan continues on 95.7 The Game.
We're going to get back into that galactically ugly game last night between the Warriors and Knicks. Knicks win 119-104 in a game that was highlighted by a head-scratching ejection of Draymond Green. Yeah, the first tech's on him, but that second tech can't be put on him. And as a matter of fact, the NBA rescinded it, but damage done. Warriors stood no chance defensively without Draymond in a game that the referees decided, you know what fans want to watch tonight? They want to watch a battle of free throws. And that's what we got last night. It was ugly. Steve Kerr was upset. It just wasn't a very good basketball game. And hopefully the next basketball game that they play, which is going to be tomorrow night against the Utah Jazz, will look a little bit better. Certainly no degree of difficulty getting easier, though. The Jazz, like the Knicks, very defensive-minded, always slow you down. And unlike the Knicks, the Jazz, like, historically play well against the Warriors no matter how the Jazz are going. They just, some uniforms get on the court with other uniforms and play better than what you expect. And it feels like Utah always gives the Warriors more than they actually want at any point in time in the Warriors' competitive arc. So why would this be any different this time around?
Because this is a weird season and everything is different than it's ever been before. Other than that, I mean, you sort of know what Utah likes to do at this point. We're still trying to figure out what the Warriors are. We know what they like to do. They just don't do it enough to be considered consistent. So it's kind of a weird grab bag, you know. I think Utah's better at doing what it does than the Warriors are at doing what they do, because Utah does it more often than Golden State does right now. Whether that holds true tonight, I think, is a very open question, though, because we've seen the Warriors at their best and we've seen the Warriors at their worst in a 3-day stretch.
Yeah, the it's going to be another push and pull of pace, right? The Jazz are happy to slow things down, and we know the Warriors really don't want to do that. I do think one of the nice things about this matchup is in a game where Donovan Mitchell's scoring success has a lot to do with the Jazz's success as a team, the Warriors have defenders to throw at Donovan Mitchell. I mean, that's one thing they do have. And for that reason, defending without fouling tomorrow is going to be huge in this game. You know, keep Donovan Mitchell off the free throw line.
When it came to defending without fouling, that's the thing that upset Steve Kerr the most from last night's game. In his post-game press conference, he basically said that his team last night was undisciplined, too many reaches, not enough feet.
Mindless reaching, mindless decision-making defensively. I mean, we've got a very long and athletic team, and we've got an opportunity to be very good defensively. I've been touting our defense, especially since Draymond came back. But play after play, you got guards getting into the paint, and instead of having to shoot a floater over James Wiseman or Draymond Green, we're just hacking guys from behind right across the wrist as if we're going to get a steal or something. So we're just totally undisciplined defensively.
Not only are you not keeping in front of your defender or in front of the offensive player you're defending with your own feet when they get past you, there are terrible fouls on the back end of these layups, and you're coming at the back of a guy's hand, not at the front of a basketball. So what are we doing? Well, Steve Kerr, how do you stop this team from fouling too often? We've identified the problem. What's the solution? Here he is.
We're fouling. It has nothing to do with the refs. It has to do with us. So we practice defensive fundamentals every day, and it's obviously not enough. So I've got to think of some way to get across to these guys, how we're going to defend. And maybe it just means if a guy reaches, he comes out, and forget the rotation. Just take a few games where if you reach, you come out, and we just have a bunch of guys filing in and out of the game. And if they reach, they come out, and then another guy goes in, and next guy comes out when he reaches, and that's the only thing I can think of, because we practice defense without fouling every day, and it's not happening. So we've got to somehow find a win.
The only thing a basketball coach can do is manage minutes. And if you're looking to get a young man's attention, yanking his minutes is a good way to do it. I mean, that sounds like a threat, but it really is one of the only levers available to him to pull. I mean, how do I get you to pay attention? You guys know the rules. You know what we need to do, but you're not doing it. So we're going to ask someone else to do it other than you until you can.
It's the defending without fouling version of I'll turn this car around if you kids don't shut up back there.
Yeah, it is.
it's a remarkable way of putting it, though, too, because if you're going to pull guys for that, and it makes perfect sense to me, so I'm not arguing against it, you're also saying, I'm not going to worry about the rotations for a while. We're going to break this down into stop doing that. If I wanted a cornerback, I'd sign one. And look, I think that's sort of the message here. And the fact that he says it to us as the conduit suggests to me that he's now sort of put himself on notice that if he lets this go on and doesn't pull guys when they're doing it, people outside are going to start asking questions, which he doesn't really want to have to deal with. So this is sort of his last card to play for right now, which is if you do what I'm telling you specifically not to do, you will sit next to me and Ron Adams, and you will sit there for a while. Enjoy yourselves.
Yeah, Kerr's basically saying it goes to 11. I don't want to dial it to 11, but I can go to 11 too. And if it requires losing minutes to have your full attention on the topic of not reaching, that is what I am willing to do. I will give up games tonight to make sure we're a better team a couple weeks from now with the lessons that I keep on telling you are paramount to us being the team that we want to be a few weeks from now, which is a not-reaching NBA team playing good defense. He is right. They do have elite length at a few positions. So the temptation to reach in with those long arms, like, I get why it's there. The amount of discipline it takes to not swat at a basketball is almost commensurate with the amount of instincts it takes to properly block a basketball. Like, these guys, it's not an effort of laziness, but it is a bad habit. And you got a few too many guys involved in that bad habit. And, boy, Steve is just coming right down their road by saying, let me tell you, it's going to be. We're going to play less of you unless you start doing more of what I want you to do. And I tell you, it's what he needs to do.
I think the moment matters too, right? This is an opportunity for him because you just had a game where this happened way too much, specifically in this game. I mean, it's been all year, but specifically in this game, it was really bad. And the result was you lost a game to a team you're probably better than. So now is sort of an opportune teaching moment for him on this issue, and I think he seized it with both hands in the post-game press conference.
Draymond was doing a really nice job defensively last night, even though he wasn't rebounding the basketball, what Golden State Warrior really does after all. Randall wasn't having a night where it looked like he was going to finish with a triple-double, and then all of a sudden he finishes one assist shy of a triple-double. This is because Draymond Green was ejected from this basketball game with about 90 seconds, less than 2 minutes to play in the first half, which is part of the unpacking of what we're going to do right now from this Draymond tech. First of all, give me the Tim Roy call. Here it is. Here's how it sounded last night. And if it sounds like they're surprised that there's an ejection happening, I think we all were when we watched how undemonstrative the actual moment was. Let's go to the tape. Tim Roy.
Randall on the jog and a technical foul, and Draymond Green has been tossed.
He was yelling at Wiseman.
Draymond saying, hey, I was yelling it at Wiseman, not the official. That's what all the Warriors are saying.
And correct. Like, that's what happened. And the NBA admitted that the official made a mistake. They rescinded that second technical for Draymond's season total. So that's good.
And you can tell the immediate reaction is, wait a second, he's yelling at what? Like, it's not like this. You didn't need a detective to figure out who he was yelling at.
Right, but the referee apparently did, and he thought he was the subject of Draymond's rage. And I guess that's where the segment goes. Because, look, Draymond Green, I would never want to unplug the passion from the man. It's part of it. Like, a whole bunch of hard-to-explain and stupid technical fouls is just what you get. If, you know, you ordered the Draymond, like, excuse me, sir and madam, you ordered the Draymond. You know what comes with that, but you ordered him anyway. So don't complain about us bringing you Draymond in his full. That was a stupid tech glory. It's part and parcel of who the guy is. But like, it's one thing to be able to not stop yourself from getting texts because you're competing so hard. It's another thing entirely to now you're picking up texts because you're communicating so just you're basically scared the official, Draymond. You're scaring people. Like you're trying to coach up your teammate, maybe a little too aggressively. Just going to throw that out there. I've never seen on-court instruction pick up a technical foul until last night, but indeed that's what happened. Draymond, please consider the time left in the half. Any lesson that you want to have taught to young Mr. Wiseman, there's a locker room that is 90 seconds away from you being in it, and you getting ejected from this game would be a bad idea. The stupid tech that you picked up early in the game that led to this tech being your second tech, well, there's a problem there too. Don't pick that up. Stop grimacing and mean mugging every single thing that you do not like. But again, we ordered the Draymond. It's part of it. But it really is something else that a guy got ejected for yelling instructions at a teammate, which maybe thinks, you know, maybe Draymond needs to work on how he's delivering these instructions. Because as much as I love Draymond and you guys love Draymond and we all love Draymond, last night was a little bit of a vision into how this all ends if it indeed ends poorly for Draymond. And I'll take you through that in just a little bit. But I caught a glimpse of the future I'd rather not see for Draymond last night.
I don't view it with that same sense of apocalyptic vision. I think what happened was you don't see very many players instructing guys on the court the way he does. And I think Ben Taylor basically misunderstood it. I don't think this was I'm going to get Draymond Green because he was mean to me 3 years ago. I think the official just screwed up, and the indication was that he figured that out as soon as the game was over and put in the game report, you should rescind this technical, because the league wouldn't operate as quickly as it did unless the official realized after he hit him with the technical that he'd screwed up. So I think this was just a mistake. And I think to the extent that, you know, an empty building may contribute to that, I think maybe Draymond might sort of change the tone of how he's talking to his teammates. But I don't think it's a huge deal, because I think it was just one of those accidents that happened where an official makes a mistake, realizes it, cops to it, but he can't pull it back. So I don't see it as a watershed moment as much as it is sort of a not a teaching moment, but sort of a, Draymond, if you're going to do that, make it sound less like you're yelling at people indiscriminately, and, you know, maybe open with you know, Wiseman's name or Oubre's name. You know, Kelly, you should, you know, because that's kind of a tip off that he's not yelling at the official, because there aren't any Kellys who referee, and while there are Jameses, most of them that I know don't pay attention to much.
There wasn't one working last night either.
Do you know what he said?
I do not know exactly what he said, no.
So how do you know he didn't do that?
I don't know that he didn't do that, but if he did that and the official teed him up anyway, then you've got a huge problem, and the official's not going to back off from that because he's just angry. The fact that it was the official that put in the report that he'd screwed up, because the NBA, you know, released that information, suggests to me that he teed him up too fast, realized
it. No, we know he teed him up too fast.
I'm talking about what he realized. I mean, the fact that he put it in the game report that he said,
yes,
he shouldn't get the second technical. Well,
okay, but we all know that. That's not what I'm talking about. The point I'm making is, how do you know that what Draymond did wasn't on his end as totally innocuous and unrelated to the referee as anything he might have said at that moment? And the answer is you don't.
And I didn't suggest that I did.
I'm not saying you did, Ray. I'm trying to make a point. You said maybe Draymond should in the future specifically address a teammate or, you know, have the right tone or what have you. But the reality is, all we know here is that a referee gave a technical to a player who definitely wasn't talking to him. And I can't for the life of me understand why anyone would put that on Draymond at any level, or why Draymond would possibly think, well, I don't need to say anything to James Wiseman about the play that just happened right now because I can say it in 90 seconds, because why would he not be able to say it right now? To me, he did absolutely nothing wrong in that instance, and I just, like, it's a referee totally blowing it.
This
the
is maybe where
totally
yeah.
blew it.
This is where reputations matter, and Draymond's reputation might have betrayed him in this moment with this official.
But honestly, it's an undesired situation.
It totally is. And
reputation
look,
ought not matter.
Right. But that isn't real. It does.
No, it's not real. I'm just saying, like,
of course,
even that is effectively a mistake by the referee.
Right.
Because that's not how he's supposed to do it, or she.
I agree. I agree with you. And what is even weirder about this whole thing is, look, I'm not going to run to the defense of, well, you don't know what Draymond said, I'm sure he said it all perfectly. I'm sure Draymond doesn't say half of what he says perfectly. Like, he throws manhole. No, I know. But he throws manhole covers and really doesn't care where the words land. Like, that's who he is. I have seen Draymond be incredibly demonstrative in his body language and in his actions, basically begging for technicals. Last night, he's just jogging backwards. I mean, it is the least demonstrative, it's as weird and odd an ejection as I think I've ever seen. But I do infer something from it. And when I look into, like, how will it end for Draymond, it's going to be fascinating to watch how this whole thing does reach its extinguished point. And the way I looked at it was okay, so this is going to sound like a completely ruthless attempt for me to be talking about Indiana basketball. It's not. If I wanted to talk about Indiana basketball, I would talk about the big win over number 4 Iowa last night that they did at Iowa. Yeah,
you know,
there we are.
I hate how close that song is to Nash's fingers at all times.
Yeah, that's why Nash got a really nice Christmas bonus from Uncle Damon this year. I said, you keep that button close. So here's the deal. Draymond Green has so much Bobby Knight in him, it's not even funny. If Bobby Knight were a basketball player, he'd be Draymond Green. If Draymond Green were a head coach, he'd be Bobby Knight. The two of them are cut from the exact same cloth of attitude, how you go about treating people once you have reached a level of mastery of your subject, expertise. And what do you know? The both of them spoke the exact same language, the language of basketball. Bobby's passion, his knowledge for the game, his strength, and utter belief that he knew more about it than anybody else in the room was his greatest asset, and it would also become his greatest weakness. Here's how this all ends for Draymond Green if he doesn't watch himself in some sort of a way. And he's got a really long fuse here because I truly believe that James Wiseman is a patient and very good pupil. Very good, very, very coachable. James Wiseman eventually is going to graduate from Draymond Green University. When he does so, I believe we'll be looking at a player who will be going to the All-Star game with much more frequency than Draymond Green. When James Wiseman becomes that guy, there will be a point in that young man's evolution where he is all tired of getting yelled at by the guy who certainly taught him a lot about the game, but at this point in time is averaging 4 points a night. There is a point in time where Draymond is going to wear out his welcome with even an attentive pupil. We saw Draymond wear out his welcome with Kevin Durant in a way. And I could see it happening with Wiseman in a way. And now maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe that Wiseman has a level of patience which will not bring him to that breaking point, or Draymond will have retired before Wiseman is that guy who's reached the level of, what are you going to tell me about it? But I looked at what I saw was the way it ends poorly for Draymond, if indeed it does end poorly for Draymond, and he's got that kind of Bobby Knight air about him where the only way it's going to end is poorly. I think it's safe to see that the end of Draymond's career will not be put down gently into that good night. It is going to go clanging and clashing and making an awful lot of noise on its way out. I foresee it. I'd like to be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. Again, as we've established earlier, even if I am, show starts at 2:00 on Monday. But I got a little bit of a Marley's ghost of football, or excuse me, of Draymond basketball future in that moment last night.
I don't see it that way, because I think, one, Draymond Green is not a martinet, and he doesn't scream mindlessly all the time. And I think he's bright enough to know when the lesson he's trying to deliver is being absorbed.
We said all those things about Bobby, by the way. All those things.
Well, except that
I certainly never said any of those things about Bobby, so let's not we that.
Yeah.
Fair
enough, but just saying.
Yeah. The other thing is that Wiseman is the sort of guy who I believe will develop the confidence in time to just go up to Draymond and say, I know that already. I know that. You can stop telling me. And I think for the most part, I see no evidence that theirs is a relationship where it's going to be so one-sided that somebody will feel oppressed at the end. And I think they're both bright enough to know that basic human interaction involves knowing tone of voice and all those other things, and that they will develop a relationship that is likely to be even better than the one they already have. So I'm operating, and I hate to do this, as you know, I'm operating giving them both the benefit of the doubt, because they've not shown any indication that they're not capable of that.
Look, I know that there's totally a big brother yelling at me, tough love, really good mastery between the two of them right now. And I'm sure there's a million times where Draymond's got his arm around him that we haven't seen, that we're not factoring into my theory anyways. But just unchecked aggression eventually has to be put in check. And at that moment of putting that unchecked aggression in check, things could explode. That's what happened with Bobby. I think that's what could happen one day with Draymond.
All right, then.
Oh, we gotta go. I just got the gotta go sign. See, I'm not even paying attention. This is what happens when I start talking about Bobby. All right, so we're going to go real quick and then come on back, and we're going to do our longest commercial-free uninterrupted segment of the entire day. So stick around. We got a Kolsky's Corner to wrap up the entire week, too. And we will also tip our cap and pay our respects to the passing of Henry Aaron before it's all said and done today. So stick around with us. You want to weigh in, 888-957-9570 is the number. Damon Ratto and Kolsky brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Our Exergen temperature check tells us that it's 50 degrees in San Francisco.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
It's the final hour of a very busy week here on 95.7 The Game. Interesting games, inspiring games from the Golden State Warriors, and a game last night against the Knicks, which made you just go, yuck. So where are they? Well, as far as Steve Kerr says, you know, he says, we're a mediocre team with potential. That's a pretty tough evaluation that he's putting on his own team. He was very unhappy with the performance of the Warriors last night. Got a guy in the text line saying, I don't know, why does 95.7 The Game jump on any opportunity to crush the Warriors? We don't do that. I'm not doing that. That's not what we're doing. But we're talking about a game last night that was undone by poor play, poor decisions, Draymond's poorly timed ejection, which is, you know, kind of his fault, but never his fault all at the same time. And that's usual for Draymond. And it's just, it's,
see,
it's,
I just think that's,
they're a fascinating team.
I just think that's a blatant mischaracterization of this particular ejection. Usually it's mostly his fault. This, to me, is 0% his fault. It's just an obvious mistake by a referee who admitted that mistake, and then the league formally admitted the mistake. Like, I can't put a fraction of it on him.
Right, but at the same time, like, crazy ejections only continue to happen to one Golden State Warrior. Like, this one might not have been on him, but it all happens to him, basically. Like, you know, I mean, it.
But that's just saying a thing out loud with no context or recognition of what actually happened. I mean, it's, yeah, Draymond talks too much to the referees. Yes, Draymond should not get as many technicals as he does. Also, yesterday he got totally screwed through no fault of his own whatsoever. And I'm not going to say that because he's a demonstrative guy in general, he shouldn't be able to say, you know, no, F that to his teammate one time. Like, that's just ridiculous.
Well,
so,
again, you know, but, you know, I'm kind of talking about the first tech that he picked up. You know, he picked up a tech earlier in the game because he just can't stop talking. And that's, that's the guy who just has a level of unchecked aggression. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that Draymond really, really gets off in his personal life by finding out where the line is and then tiptoeing over it just a little bit. As Dave Chappelle once said, there are some people who are just habitual line steppers. He's one of those guys. Knight, in my mind, was one of those.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.